Now, we're in Matthew chapter 25. Jesus is talking. He's teaching through a story like the way he does. And he describes the scene when he comes back to earth the second time. He's sitting on a throne. Everyone on the planet is gathered before him. And he's sorting to see who belongs with him. The way a shepherd needs to sort his flock to identify stray goats that have he has picked up along the way. So the sorting criteria, we're told, is whether someone is a sheep, which is part of the flock, or whether someone is a goat, which is not part of the flock, is how each person has responded to people whom we call the stranger. The Greek word for stranger is xenos, which is how we get the word xenophobia, the fear of strangers, which is a very current issue in our flattening world. Especially, if you think about it, we were taught to be cautious of strangers by our mothers, probably, right? So what's more, in Jesus' story, not only are these strangers strange to us in the sense that we know nothing about them, they have some overt needs. Jesus says they were hungry, thirsty, didn't have a place to stay, cold and sick, and even in prison. And Jesus says the sheep are those who offered compassion and hospitality to the strangers, whereas the goats are those who ignore the strangers. Because here's the kicker. Jesus says he stands in solidarity with the strangers, so that if we welcome and help the strangers, it's like we're welcoming and helping Jesus. Whereas if we turn our backs on the strangers, it's like we are turning our backs on, what did I say? Whereas if we turn our backs on the strangers, it's like we're turning our backs on Jesus. So sounds like an important story to figure out for those of us who want to be part of Jesus' flock and would not want to inadvertently turn our backs on Jesus in any way. Now, this is not actually a straightforward story to understand. People argue about the details and what Jesus is trying to teach here. And one key mystery is, who exactly are these strangers? Who are the thirsty and hungry and people who need all sorts of things? How did they get this way? Where are their relatives and friends? And why is Jesus so invested in the plight of these strangers? And why our response to these strangers have such significant impact on our relationship with Jesus for eternity? Which is way too many questions for one sermon, and I'm just going to leave the heavy lifting to Dave when he gets back. Then you guys can Bible study. But for this morning, I would just invite us to get into the story by trying to remember a time when we were the stranger. My family were immigrants. When we came, we knew this one family with kids our age, and this one kid, I don't know why, he tormented me. Every time we went over to his house, we had to take our shoes off, because it's a thing we do. And when I come back, he would have filled my shoes with water, so that I would plunge my feet into these little tubs. I had no English. So on the first day of school, I was in Burnaby. I was waiting in the hallway when my mom went to do business in the office. And this big man came and stood over me and said something. I had no idea what. So I said the only two words I knew how to say, which was, "Pardon me." And then he said whatever he said again. And I said, "Pardon me." That went on for like 5 minutes. And then so at this point, both of us just wanted to be out of there, but none of us knew how to get out of the situation. So finally he said something, and I just guess that he asked me what grade I was going into. So I said 7. And then he was just so relieved when he walked away. Now there's this one kid in the class, again, I don't know why, decided pick on me. So he called me this word that was derogatory for Chinese people, except the jokes was on him because I didn't know the word. Now, it would have been awful eventually, probably, if it weren't for these two other kids who decided to make me their friend, and I don't know why either. So I remember one day I was walking up the hill, the mean kid was coming the other way, he was yelling whatever he was yelling, and my two friends literally, the way I remember it, is that they kind of stepped up and kind of pushed me behind them and kind of formed the human shield in front of me, and then they just went at it with each other. And then kind of pretty much after that, that kid left me alone. And perhaps you can remember an experience like that. And you know, nothing makes us or reminds us more of what it feels like to be a stranger than if we travel, right? Isn't it completely disempowering to try to find your way in some place where you can't speak the language, or you don't know where you're going, and you don't know who's safe to ask for help from, or who might be out to get you? So a few years ago, my sister and I went to Japan, and she knew a little bit of Japanese because she had a boyfriend at one point. Different story. Anyways, it was 4 days into this trip when dinner time, and she said to me, you know, tonight, when we go eat, can we just go to some place with pictures? Because she was so tired of negotiating, navigating menus and things. But then, it just takes sort of one person to make your vacation a good one, like a kind person, right? So, like this taxi driver who handed me this picture of Mount Fuji. Now, my sister and I have spent an entire day. In fact, we went out of the way to travel for an entire day to one of these lakes by the mountain just to take a picture. Except, of course, when we got up in the morning, it was completely foggy and you couldn't see the mountain anywhere. So we spent the entire day chasing back and forth between two lakes, just basically following what was a hole in the sky, hoping that we would catch this picture, but we never did. So after an entire day of this, we just got into a taxi and we're heading back to the hotel in defeat. Now somehow, the driver, who didn't really speak English, figured out why we were so glum. So he went into his visor and pulled out this picture of, like, a perfect picture of Mount Fuji. And he turned around and handed it to us. My sister, who it's kind of a very seasoned traveler, she immediately smelled a scam. So under her breath, she says, give it back. Give it back. He's going to want money for this. Except then the guy is trying his best to kind of tour guide us back to the hotel, and I couldn't sort of get a word in edgewise. So finally, I saw an opportunity. I shoved the picture through the seat back to him, and he turned and he looked at us with kind of this horror on his face. Go, no, he says, that's for you. It's a gift. And then so at that moment, we're just filled with this Asian shame, you know. Like, he was trying to be friendly, and we just wanted to keep him a stranger. Now, looking around this room, I suspect a lot of us have memories of what it felt like to move to this country as a newbie, to start over making friends or navigating grocery stores or government agencies. And if you were lucky, somebody noticed that you needed help or a friend and came to your rescue in some way, and so that you didn't feel completely a stranger anymore. Because this is the other possibility of what Jesus was getting at in this story about strangers, that actually we are the strangers who have an obvious need and we're at the mercy of people who don't know God. Because back in chapter 10 in Matthew, Jesus sent out his disciples two by two to go and knock on doors, and he told them to take nothing, no money, not an extra shirt, and not even a stick in Matthew. He warned them that they are going to risk rejection or even arrest by the authorities, in which case they are to shake off their sandals, you remember, and dust themselves off and just move on to the next town. But somebody just may open a door and take pity on them and invite them in. And that bit of hospitality from a stranger may be the beginning of a friendship, where not only two strangers might become friends, but maybe that stranger might even find friendship with God. The last thing Jesus told us to do was to make disciples as we go about our lives. And in the way Jesus made disciples, the first step involved a situation where two strangers get to decide if and how they might become friends. Our ability to make friendship between strangers may be the important first step to doing the last thing that Jesus asked us to do. To become good friends with someone and allow God's love and compassion to flow in and be experienced and felt. And boy, don't we need more of that today? For God's love and compassion to be felt around the world. It's not just the obvious needs of refugees who have lost everything and have been displaced to strange lands all over the world. And it's not just that we have this terrible problem with deadly opioids, where I gather people struggle in private with things that make them turn to drugs for relief. It's also how we're so paranoid and lonely when we have all this technology that is supposed to help us connect with each other, and somehow some of the loneliest people in the world live in very big, crowded cities. Did you know you could rent a family in Japan for the holidays? And I read somewhere that London has this hotline for elderly people to call because they have no one to talk to. And the person who wrote this article said, as she's listening to this person talk, she realizes that this is the first conversation she's having, that other person is having, for in 2 weeks. And when I read that, I thought, you know, I think we could use something like that here. I read this story about a guy on a journalist who signed up for Facebook for the first time. And very quickly, he gathered 200 friends. And then he decided he wanted to know how many of these people are real friends. So he put on he found a babysitter because he's a single parent. And he put on Facebook, he says, next Tuesday is, or whatever it is my birthday. Come and have a drink with me. I'm going to be at this place between this time and this time. So he showed up on that night and he waited and nobody came. And until finally one person showed up, she stayed for 10 minutes, had a drink, and then left. And then he wrote on Facebook, 200 friends on Facebook, and I'm still drinking alone on my birthday. Somebody says in Vancouver is a place, it's a friendly place, but it's a place where you're most likely to have a conversation with a stranger, but not very likely to be invited back to have a meal with somebody. People are calling this an epidemic of loneliness because possibly we may have forgotten how to make friends between strangers. Now, I'm just going to tell you that I really have no business being a pastor. If churches are communities of friends, then pastors and leaders in the church should be very good at facilitating friendship. And I'm telling you, I'm absolutely the wrong guy for the job. Being a loner is kind of like in my DNA. When I was in high school, I went to Churchill. And I walked to school with an umbrella in one hand and a book in the other hand. Now, I have a friend in school named Barry, who, amazing coincidence, has family in this congregation. So I was having coffee with him last week, and I said, do you remember I used to walk to school with this umbrella and a novel? And he says, and your violin, he says. And I thought, wow, like it's been like 40 years since high school. But apparently my nerddom made such a deep impression on my friends. And that's who I was. I kept to myself. I'm kind of okay if I just have sort of one friend at any given time. My mom used to have to tell me to get out of the basement and go outside and find something to do. I have no people skills and no need to develop any. So let me tell you what happened to me. I have an uncle who left boxes of books in my basement. So one summer, I went through them and I found this book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. I read it, and I clearly remember when I finished the book, it was as if God said, if you want to be useful, go and learn to do this. Well, the book was an intriguing thing, so then I went to the Christian bookstore, bought a couple of more books, read them, and kind of tucked those information away. When I finished college, kind of by absolutely by accident, I joined this traveling singing group. And one of the things that they did was they tell us, that part of our ministry was not just on the stage, but every night we stayed with the family, and part of the ministry was to sit and have conversation with the people that volunteered to house us. And let me tell you, the first night, I was scared to death. I was sitting with this family in their living room, and I had no idea how to talk to them. So that night, I went to bed, and then I decided the way to do this is I made up 10 questions that I would then run through whenever I meet people I didn't know. And so I did this for months at a time, and I did it for a few years, and it was my lessons of learning how to listen to people. And so then that took me to, I just skipped over to where I found myself planting a church. Well, I had the idea that if I wanted to have more friends in my life, I need to kind of move part of my life into the neighborhood. So the first thing I did was I thought, I'll go find somebody to cut my hair. So I looked up on the internet. I went to this place. When I went in, they handed me this clipboard to fill out information as if I was going to the dentist. So I'm sitting there filling out the clipboard, and suddenly I realized every single person in this room is speaking Japanese. And so now I'm thinking to myself, I hope someone speaks English. And then I'm just then reassuring myself, you know, hair always grows back. Anyways, I got my first haircut. It was fine. Then I went the second time. And the second time he says, oh, you know, you haven't seen you for a while. And then suddenly I remembered, so in between the haircuts is when I went to Japan with my sister. So then I said, I went to Japan. And so he said, how did you like it? Now, I was told a long time ago that when people ask you when you come back from vacation how it was, nobody really wants to see a slideshow. So I would just make up this one sentence for conversation. So I decided coming back from Japan, I would say, people are very polite, good food, fantastic. I love Tokyo. The highlight was Hiroshima. One day I would like to go back and see Hokkaido. So he said, how was Japan? So I said, people are nice, food is good, Tokyo, Hiroshima, Hokkaido. Then I said, so where did you live when you were in Japan? He said, I kid you not. He said, I moved here from Tokyo, but I grew up in Hiroshima, and I was born on Hokkaido. And right at that moment, it's as if God said, I did all the heavy lifting, go and be friends. And so he's been cutting my hair ever since. The first time he went back to Japan to visit his parents, he was a bit worried about his shop because he's never left it before. So I just said, you know, I don't live far away, so I gave him my phone number. I said, if there's an emergency, you can call me. So now every time he goes to Japan, he brings me stuff like I was his kid or something, even though I'm much older than he is. I also found this massage therapist in the neighborhood who is an older man who's lived a lot of life. So we have like really interesting conversations. Last year, I got to help him replace some stuff over the internet because he's a bit intimidated by the technology. And recently, I drove him to his cataract surgery. And, you know, these are things I suppose his kids would do, except he doesn't have any. So then I kind of got to be his kid from time to time. Now, there's nothing really heroic about these stories, just ordinary interactions between friends, except I would have missed having them, these interactions, if I had been content to just for us to stay as strangers. The best stories I know last year about God showing up had to do with becoming friends with refugees. So around the time when this refugee thing became front page news for us, Our little church had a conversation about whether it was possible for us to sponsor somebody, and at that time we decided we couldn't actually do it properly. Now, my friend Barry goes to this church on the west side, so I remember him mentioning that they were sponsoring people, so I wanted to see how maybe we could get in on it. So I called in, and then he told me the story. He said when the refugee thing became known, there's a man in his church who remembers sponsoring refugees from, I think, Cambodia from a few decades ago. So that man called up the pastor and said, you know, we did this before. I think we can do this again. So after some committee meetings, they decided that it was a go. So they contacted the government. The government gave them a list and said, pick some people. So they decided they would pick two families and an individual. But then by the time, you know, things move slowly in a church, by the time they actually pick the people, some of the people have been placed, so they had to pick again. So given a second list, they picked again, and then completely coincidentally, they ended up picking two families whose dads are brothers and had been displaced to different places in the world, and somehow, accidentally, they were reunited to brothers. And then there's this other guy. So now, of course, with trying to help people live in Vancouver, a big problem is housing. So they found out that in the church, there was a bunch of college people that lived in a house. So they called up one of the guys and said, you know, would you have room for one more for that single person? And this person they talked to said, no, we don't have room. But he says, we will make room. Now, isn't that what we're talking about here? That the first step to becoming friends is that we make room in our lives for a stranger, physically, emotionally, in our schedule, and just in our heart somewhere. So next, they saw this ad in the papers for a bottom part of a house for $1,400. So they thought that would be good for one of the families. So one of the person was immediately dispatched to go and secure this rental. So this person is talking to the owner of the house, and somehow in the course of the conversation, the owner says, actually, the upstairs is available too. So this person thought, wouldn't it be great if the two brothers and their families got to live in the same house together? So then she kind of told this owner the story about the how they accidentally found these two brothers and so on. And so, but then she says, you know, it's $1,400. If it's $1,400 upstairs too, we couldn't possibly afford it. So the owner thought for a minute, and she goes, okay, I'm going to rent this to you for the original $1,400 for the entire house for 1 year. How does that happen? The talk about kindness of a stranger to some other strangers. And don't you feel like just listening to the story that God is in it somewhere, gently opening doors and connecting and blessing people. So one day, my friend Barry kind of mentioned that one of the people they sponsored needs a job. So that made me think of this family friend we have who owns a bakery. This friend's wife grew up with my uncles and aunts, and so they have known each other all their lives. A few months earlier, we're at this family dinner, and you know, my grumpy uncle, because apparently everyone has a grumpy uncle, so my grumpy uncle was going on about the refugee thing and how these people disrupt our way of life and so on. And to my surprise, the baker friend kind of spoke up for the refugees, which is kind of unusual. And he said, you know, the way I look at it, he said, is that we have no choice but to help. Now, he's not religious, as far as I know, but the fact that he's arguing it feels like a right thing to do, it was interesting to me. So my uncle, kind of to win the argument, he went for the jugular. So he said, so you mean you would give one of these people a job? And the baker said, yeah, I would love to if I have the opportunity, he says. And at that moment, I thought, opportunity struck me as a really odd word to describe giving a job to help somebody. And sure enough, when Barry told me one of the people needed a job, I called him, the baker, and asked if he meant what he said. And I just, as I'm writing down the information on the phone, I couldn't stop, kind of had to hold back laughter, because I realized he's talking like I'm doing him a favor by giving him this opportunity to hire a refugee. And that's it. We welcome strangers not just because we want to do what Jesus asks, not just because the world desperately needs kindness. It's also about us experiencing God and His good news more fully by getting caught up in the good things God is doing around the world and feeling our souls thrive because we're learning to care about what God cares about. You know, actually, Barry himself has a story about how he went and knocked on 50 doors in his neighborhood around Cambie Street and invited these strangers to his house for a barbecue. And they have created a kind of friendship among these people who used to be strangers. And Barry keeps telling me stories of how these people bless him when they get together. What if the next stranger you meet is not there by accident, but God sent them to you so you could become friends and bless each other? I saw this a couple of weeks ago on the TV. This journalist remembers a day in college when he was miserable, and he walked into this empty common room where somebody left the TV on, and it was Mr. Rogers. So he sat and he watched the entire episode, and then he said by the end of that he felt better. And wouldn't you believe it, a week later he was waiting for an elevator, the elevator doors opened, and Mr. Rogers was in the elevator. So he stood next to Mr. Rogers, and Mr. Rogers at some point looked at him and goes, "So," he says, "were you one of my TV neighbors?" And so this college kid basically said that he was, and then he told him the story of how 1 week earlier he saw this episode that made him feel better. And at some point, Mr. Rogers took him and found a spot and sat down with him and said, "Now, would you like to tell me what was bothering you last week?" And so this kid started talking, and at some point he said, "Oh, you know, I don't want to keep you from anything." And Mr. Rogers said, "You know, sometimes you are exactly where you're supposed to be. Sometimes we and another stranger are exactly where we're supposed to be, so we can become friends and experience God's blessing through each other. You know, it's impossible for a pipe to carry water and not get wet. It's impossible, I think, for us to channel God's blessing and not have some of it rub off on us." Like those refugee stories. We had nothing to do with them. They're just other people's stories. But didn't we feel blessed just hearing about what God is doing? Now imagine being a part of one of those stories. Imagine how it would feel to get in on what God is doing. Imagine the new friends we would have and how God would bless us through their friendships. A long time ago, I was part of the leadership of a fellowship that kind of turned the fellowship around. It was sort of college-age people and so on. And so anyways, one day we were invited over to one of the people's house to use their pool. So I found myself sitting in the steam room with this other guy who was sitting behind me. And suddenly, out of the blue, he says, because the fellowship went from kind of dying to packing a house on a Friday night. So he said, out of the blue, he says, "You know, these people," he says, "they're just freaks and geeks." You know, I don't know exactly what he meant by that, but at that moment, I can't think of a better compliment for a group of people or a church, because it means we are really good at making people feel at home and turning strangers into friends regardless of how different we may be to each other. On a personal level, it felt validating to that boy who used to walk to school juggling a book with an umbrella and a violin, who read a book on friendship and wanted to be useful to God. And for a moment, I felt like God patting me on the back saying, "I'm kind of loving who you're becoming." And now, in many ways, I'm the same solitary person, but I've also grown perhaps to be a little more like Jesus, to learn to care about what Jesus cares about and the people he cares about. But honestly, I haven't really noticed any hard work on my part. I just have these stories of strangers becoming friends and how I have been blessed because we didn't stay strangers. There's a prayer I love. It goes like this. Lord, I crawled across the barrenness to you with my empty cup, uncertain in asking any small drop of refreshment. If only I had known you better, I would have brought buckets. I believe that your next bucket of blessing from God will come from a chance meeting with a stranger. And from becoming friends with that stranger, and I hope you have a big enough bucket. Let's pray together. Father, we sit here today, if we know you, it's because you refuse for us to stay strangers, and you took the initiative. We pray, Father, that you empower us to be like you in the way we give and receive hospitality, knowing that possibly that is the first step to how you are saving the world, one soul at a time, including our own. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.